what's beneath the surface of true crime. Uncover brings you there with premium investigations that demand justice. Each season delves into a distinct case, from the inner workings of a cult to the disturbing legacy of residential schools. Promising new content year-round, Uncover will take you on a journey through explosive revelations with hosts dedicated to revealing the truth. Uncover, the best in true crime. Find it on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. This is a CBC podcast.
Donald Trump walked into a New York City courtroom yesterday for the first ever criminal trial of a former U.S. president.
It's a case that should have never been brought. It's an assault on America. And that's why I'm very proud to be here. This is an assault on our country. And it's a country that's failing. It's a country that's run by an incompetent man who's very much involved in this case. This is really an attack on a political opponent. That's all it is.
Donald Trump is accused of falsifying business records in his attempts to cover up an affair with adult film actress Stormy Daniels. The presumed Republican presidential candidate also faces three other indictments. Philip Bump is a columnist for The Washington Post. He also writes the How to Read This Chart newsletter. He is in New York City. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning.
So remind us, what exactly is Trump being accused of in this particular court case?
Sure. So this one's a little complicated. He's being accused of, as the head of the Trump Organization, even while he was sitting as president, of recording payments to his then-attorney Michael Cohen as being a retainer and not a repayment to Cohen for Cohen's having shelled out $130,000 to give to Stormy Daniels, the adult film actress, so she wouldn't, prior to the 2016 election, reveal that she and Trump had allegedly had a romantic encounter, so to speak, several years prior. So it's several layers deep, but it all originates in this effort to try and keep the Stormy Daniels story quiet prior to the 2016 election.
Mm-hmm. So this is day two of the trial. I understand jury selection started yesterday, continues today.
Right.
No juror was chosen yesterday.
Right.
How challenging? I know you have a bit of history with this particular courtroom.
Right.
And so how challenging is it to choose a jury in this case, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it's inherently challenging to pick any jury, right? You're always trying to find people who you are, either as the court or either as attorneys representing one side or the other, who will hear your position and engage with it in good faith, right? That's always the challenge. You know, if it's a murderer who's up there, you want to try and find juries who can objectively consider the evidence at hand. This obviously is more difficult because you have more people who are likely to have an opinion of Donald Trump. And so there is a process that has been well established, and one that I went through 15 years ago for another high profile case when I was sat on a jury in Manhattan. A process that is meant to try and weed out people who may not be acceptable. And so there's a lengthy questionnaire that you have to answer that gets into very nitty-gritty details of who you are and what you believe. There's a process in which you sit down with the attorneys and the attorneys get to ask you questions. There's another process in which all the jurors together are asked questions. So there are multiple layers to this, but ultimately it's judgment calls, you know, and there have been lots of cases in which lawyers have made bad bets on juries and they've ended up losing cases. But that's how the system works.
Mm-hmm. As I said, and you were part of a jury back in 2009. Did you gain some sort of insight that leads you to believe that this, you know, that all of this will be above board and that they'll have a jury that is not biased?
Yeah, I mean, it was the case that I was a juror for back in 2009. Brooke Astor was a very famous New York socialite, you know, Astor Place in New York, the Waldorf Astoria, that's her family. Her son was accused of having stolen money from her after she began to suffer from Alzheimer's in her older years. So I didn't know anything about the case when I came in to be a prospective juror at that point in time. But what I encountered was this process in which I answered myself a lengthy questionnaire about the media that I consumed and whether I knew anyone with Alzheimer's. And I sat down with the attorneys and answered these questions. And what I discovered over the course of that, and you know, that trial took about 6 months. It was a very lengthy trial. But what I discovered is that myself and my fellow jurors were, for the most part, you know, there's even within a pool of 12 people, there is an exception, but you know, for the most part, very sincere and engaged in trying to do right by this idea of here's what the law says, here's what the evidence says, how do we see how these things overlap? And I do feel like, you know, New York City is a very large city. New York City has a reputation for being very brash and opinionated. But I do think that there are a lot of people in New York who really want to do right and say, okay, maybe I don't even particularly like Donald Trump, but I will do my duty as a citizen of the state of New York and assess what the evidence says compared to what the law says.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the big difference between the case you were in and this one, of course, is that you went in not knowing much about it. And most people
will know exactly
what's going on, right? So, but you still have faith.
I do, in part because I don't think a lot of people know actually what the case is about, right? This is, as we said at the beginning of this interview, a very complicated case. And so I think there are very few Americans who don't have some sort of opinion of Donald Trump. That's certainly the case. But it may be the case that people have, you know, not particularly strong opinions and don't know about the case and don't necessarily know what he's being accused of, don't know what the certainly don't know what the boundaries of the law are, which is what ultimately you have to compare the evidence to. And so, yeah, I do remain confident. You know, obviously Donald Trump is going out of his way to present this idea that no New York jury could ever be fair. But I can say with very limited experience that I think that's probably correct.
You know, there aren't any cameras allowed in the courtroom, but reporters yesterday said Donald Trump closed his eyes, seemed to nod off. You also heard him earlier in the case saying, in his words, an assault on America, this case is. What do you know? What do we know about what kind of defense his team is mounting here?
That's a good question. I will say in his defense, the courtroom is very boring. And so, I think there are probably times in the jury box that some of us started to fall asleep. And I think we may have been in the same room. His defense, I think, is going to be predicated on, first of all, the idea that the district attorney here is overreaching, that the district attorney had sort of set Trump in his targets and was trying to find a law that he could use to bring charges against him and to try and persuade the jurors in that regard, that this is inherently an unfair prosecution. But then secondarily, they're going to have to make an evidentiary case. They're going to have to say, no, it was not Trump who was saying that these records should be falsified in whatever way that the state is alleging. No one is really privy to what evidence either side has here, and we'll see as the case unfolds.
You know, this is just one of a bunch of indictments against Donald Trump. What other three is he facing?
So the other three that he's facing, there is one in Fulton County, Georgia, which is predicated on his efforts to try and overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election in the state of Georgia. And then there are two federal cases brought by Special Counsel Jack Smith. The first in D.C. centers broadly on his overall effort to try and retain power after 2020 and, the events that led up to January 6th. And then the case in Florida, which is based on his having taken documents marked as classified back to Mar-a-Lago after he left the presidency and then failing to turn them over to the government. The New York case is moving forward now is interesting because it may end up being probably the only case to be resolved by the time of the election. It may end up being the only trial he actually faces. A lot hinges on the presidential election this November. And that may in part hinge on what happens here in New York.
And who are the key witnesses?
Well, they're basically a galaxy of names that people have been familiar with for a while now. There's Michael Cohen, his former attorney. There is Stormy Daniels, the adult film actress. There are representatives from the Trump Organization who will be called to talk about how the documents were recorded. It's a fairly limited pool. It's fundamentally not that complicated. There are 34 charges, but they all relate to the same thing, which is how these payments were encoded. We'll probably see testimony from representatives of the parent company, the National Enquirer, who had pointed Cohen to Stormy Daniels' story. So, this is a long-standing bit of lore, if you will, about Donald Trump and what happened. And we can expect to see a lot of those people called to talk about their perspective of what occurred.
You know, it's interesting. You say you're heartened that New Yorkers will face this if they're on the jury or in general face it with sincerity. But you do also write that Americans probably look at this particular case with skepticism. Why is that?
Well, they do. Polling shows that. And I think there are two reasons for it. The first is that it was the case that there was a focus in New York, not necessarily with the current district attorney, but there was a focus about, where did the Trump Organization potentially violate the law? He's been under investigation for a long time. It's very easy to spin that as they were trying to get him. And the second is it's just complicated, right? That people understand that if you have classified documents hidden in a box in your bathroom at your house, that's a no-no, right? People get it. People understand that what happened at the Capitol on January 6th, that was something that ought not to have happened. People are a little warier of the idea that you can be held criminally accountable for recording a payment to an attorney as a retainer instead of a repayment for hush money, right? Like it's a different sort of thing that requires a little bit of nuance and understanding. And a lot of people simply aren't paying that close attention. And so they hear about what's going on and they may be predisposed to be like, yeah, I don't really get what that's about. It seems a little sketchy.
Mm-hmm. How would a guilty verdict then impact his ability to win back the White House?
It wouldn't necessarily. These things tend to be drawn out. It's not clear what would happen if he were found guilty. He would be sentenced. It's not clear what that sentence would look like. It seems unlikely that that portion of the trial would be resolved before November, but who knows? If he were sentenced to prison and sent to prison, he could still run for president. We've had people run for president from prison before, not successful candidates, obviously, but, that could happen. And, that would obviously be a very novel terrain for the country, and fraught terrain as well.
In weeks gone by and years gone by, we've heard Trump certainly be a bit unwieldy in what he says about court cases and how what he says can even be problematic for the case itself. I mean, are you expecting that he might end up saying the wrong thing when cameras are pointed at him outside of the courtroom?
Yeah, I think one of the things he's learned so far is that there aren't a lot of there isn't a lot of negative fallout for the things he's saying. He's been warned multiple times to be cautious in how he refers to people who are involved in the case, and he has not apparently taken that to heart. It'll be interesting to see if the judge imposes any sort of sanction on him for doing so. I do think, though, and I was not in the courtroom yesterday, but I do think that the reality of this, that he has to go every day, he has to sit there unless he gets approval from the court not to appear. I think that it is going to become very apparent very quickly that he is, on even footing with the people who are jury applicants and eventually the jurors, that he is just a person sitting there. He is not a larger-than-life figure in that courtroom, and that this is a very real thing that he has to endure. I can't, my interactions with Donald Trump are somewhat limited, and I pause before saying that he might be humbled by it, but if anything's going to humble him, this is probably going to be something of a humbling experience.
And how long is this expected to go on? Like, how long is he going to have to schlep down there and sit in that courtroom?
It's hard to say. I think a good rule of thumb is that trials last longer than you expect them to. There's a lot of fighting between attorneys that gets resolved while the jurors are just sitting in the back, waiting for the action, so to speak. So it's hard to say. It'll certainly take weeks. It probably won't even start the trial itself until May, the actual hearing of evidence and so on and so forth. The odds that it takes less than a month are very, very small. And it's there is no outward bound. It depends on what the fight looks like. It depends, too, on whether or not Donald Trump mounts a defense and calls his own witnesses, in which case it gets, potentially twice as long.
And does Donald Trump ever take the stand?
Donald Trump always says that he's going to take the stand and very rarely does. So I think one thing we can anticipate is he will say he's going to take the stand. And I think his lawyers will do everything in their power to keep him from doing so. I don't know there's a really much of an upside. Potentially, because he is Donald Trump, they will think that he might be able to make a compelling case to a jury pool who's familiar with him and perhaps a little bit starstruck. But of course, then he opens himself up to having to answer questions under oath from prosecutors, which I think is the attorneys will try and avoid. Mm.
And Philip, just before you go, what are you watching for? What are you most interested in seeing unfold in the next couple of months?
Yeah, obviously, I'm a little bit of a nerd about this stuff. I'm just fascinated to see what the actual trial itself looks like. What are the arguments being made? Who's presenting the testimony? There's an intricacy to it that I think is really, really interesting. But of course, the stakes are huge. And whether or not Donald Trump is charged, is convicted of a crime, a felony crime, it has huge ramifications for American politics beyond just the presidential election. And so it's hard not to sort of keep that big picture in mind as well.
Okay. Philip Bump, thank you for this.
Of course. Thank you.
Philip Bump is a columnist for The Washington Post. He also writes the How to Read This Chart newsletter.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.